Hey there, Jen here, and this is a happy bit. I want to talk about the difference between guilt and shame. We interchange them sometimes more than we should, and sometimes we don't understand the difference between them. Guilt is essentially when you know you've done something wrong that hurts another person or it hurts society. It's focused on others. It's focused on behaviors, and it has an empathetic component. Shame, on the other hand, is focused on yourself. I am bad. It focuses on your identity of not good enough. So guilt can be constructive. It can help us to have a safe family, a safe society, healthy interactions, whereas shame focuses on your identity of being not good enough. So shame happens all over, all the time, more than you know. Brené Brown said, "We live in a world where most people still subscribe to the belief that shame is a good tool for keeping people in line. Not only is this wrong, but it's dangerous." So where do we see this happening? You know, we try to keep our kids in line. Some people spank and yell and threaten and punish. And, you know, I'm not going to speak about the good or bad of those, but, you know, are you using shame in the process of your punishments? Maybe you shift that to discipline, which focuses on the behavior and changing behavior rather than shaming your child's identity. We see shaming in the grocery store checkout line. You see that mom with her child crying and you give her a disapproving look, or you sigh, or you click your tongue. Shame is everywhere. You might shame your spouse by criticizing how they handle something or asking the question of, oh, what are you doing? You know, with that tone, that tiny bit of tone, or correcting them and telling them, oh, you need to do it this way. Maybe when you're fighting, you slip into shame and you do some name calling and some yelling and some threatening. All of this kind of attacks the other person's identity and is in an attempt to control other people's behavior. At a deeper level, I think it becomes an attempt to validate ourselves. When we're critical of other people, we tend to be seeing the same flaws we don't like in ourselves, whether we admit it consciously or not. Brené Brown said, "We judge people in areas where we are vulnerable to shame, where we don't feel good enough." I was thinking about shame, and I was thinking about some times when I've experienced it myself, as well as some times I have inflicted it on others, and I'm going to talk about those. When I was young, I was playing in an old pickup truck with my brother, and I was pretending to drive, and you know, I was an intense little girl, knew what I wanted, so I got in the driver's seat. By the way, I was 5, my brother was probably 3.5. I got into that driver's seat to drive and I slammed the door. Well, my brother was standing in the bed of the truck with his hand right where that door was and it slammed on his fingers. Well, I being my 5-year-old self, I didn't know that. So I kept driving. I was so cool. And then I saw my mom running towards the truck, yelling, furious. Oh, yikes. Little did I know that in my oblivion, my brother was screaming, and I just thought he was being noisy. He was screaming because his fingers were in that door. My mom proceeded to save him, see that it was going to be okay, and rake me up and down with the most horrible words. I know she was afraid, and she was just speaking her fear, which came out in a tumult of horrible you know, yelling and shaming and a few names like brat. And, you know, I think we've all had moments when we've let loose with other people and we feel bad about it later. So I don't blame my mom. But that was a moment of shame where perhaps the first moment where I remember feeling not good enough, less than, not worthy. And so we all have experiences like that over and over and over again, all of us. I remember being shamed for being too smart and too talented. Crazy, right? My brother was learning to play the guitar And he'd been practicing for weeks. I had just musical ability. And I hope this doesn't sound braggy. But anyway, I picked up that guitar and I was clear through his entire book in about 2 days and already surpassing him. And, you know, I get it. I think I would do the same thing. But my mom said, "Oh, you are good at everything, Jen. Can't you just let him have this one thing?" And it was a mixed message. I got it on an intellectual level, yet there was this sense of shame that I had done something wrong, you know? Another one that's like this. By the way, this is called tall poppy syndrome, where if you stand out too much or you excel above the crowd, people will shame you back down to blend in among the other poppies. Crazy, right? Another story for me of tall poppy syndrome. I was a good student, and the other great student in my class was Molly Brown. Yes, that was her name. Her dad taught physics and chemistry at our high school. She was smart. Molly and I always competed in everything. Well, this class, history, taught by Mr. Shelp, was graded on the curve, and we were doing fine. And it kind of became a time where we didn't have to study that hard because we always scored way above all the other students. Well, this one time I was super busy preparing for a state band competition. I was going to be playing my tenor saxophone, doing a solo, and I had to practice a lot. And we were still finishing up the basketball season. I had other classes, I had tests, and I said to Molly, "Hey, we have this test on Friday in history. Are you going to study? How much are you going to study?" And so she said, "Well, not that much, you know." So I didn't work too hard. Well, turns out she studied like crazy and she got a really good score, way higher than mine. I got just a pretty okay score, but her score was so high and he grades, his curve was so weird that I didn't do well. So I immediately turned to her and said, "I thought you weren't going to study." And Mr. Shelp, the teacher, overheard us. Now, he was an interesting character, and he pulled us in the hall and proceeded to shame us up and down, the two best students in the class. And here's what he said. "You two have been driving up the curve all year long, making the rest of the class fail." That has stayed with me, that ridiculous shaming, trying to get the tall poppies to sink back down and blend in with the crowd so the curve didn't get messed up for the rest of the class. Shame, trying to get people to conform, to do what you want, trying to control them, trying to get them to adopt your values and your priorities, trying to get them to think like you. We all try to control each other with shame, more often than we know. So I experience shame sometimes from my spouse. Every time he criticizes or corrects my parenting or usually it's my parenting. I'm not always the best parent, okay? But he'll call me out and he does it in a way that kind of attacks my identity, or at least he used to until I pointed out, "Hey, when you say that I always do this, you're shaming me because that attacks my identity." And so he tries instead to say, "Right now you are blank engaging in XYZ behavior. Maybe you could try a different way." So when we attack the identity of our kids with words like always or never or you, that inches into shaming, and with our spouse as well. But if we shift it and calmly talk about, what choices could you make here? What choices might, you know, help our family go more smoothly? What choices might make this a better situation? Then you emphasize the behavior rather than shaming their entire identity. Okay, well, me, I shame people too. And I've been thinking about this lately because I shame my teens. I have been shaming my two struggling teens quite a lot. And I can't help myself. By the way, as great as things were on that last time I talked about them in Happy Bit 112, which I will link to in the show notes for this episode. Well, as good as things were going, things have slid downwards. And I think I understand it's because they're depressed. I see it. Their depression which is something that comes right down the pipe on my side of the family. My parents, my brothers, all of them, even myself at times. Well, I see that in my teens, and so they're sliding. Not in all the bad ways that they were before, but sometimes I want to shame them, trying to get them to stop doing these destructive behaviors. And I'll say things like, oh, are you doing that again? Or I'm kind of getting tired of you doing X, Y, Z. This tone, right? And sometimes my tone becomes yelling and, you know, I hate when that spiral happens, when I shame them. Ugh. I want to challenge you to take a moment to look at yourself and try to see where you might be shaming other people. Now, don't shame yourself in the process. Just know that this is a social thing that is happening all over the world. It's an attempt by others and by ourselves to control people, to get them to conform, to get them to act the way we think they should act. How do we fix it? Well, first, we're going to have a quick word from our sponsor. Then I'm going to come back and talk about empathy, self-compassion, boundaries, and courage. All of the antidotes to shame. We'll be right back. Okay, welcome back. We've been talking about shame and how we all experience shame and we all actually spend some time shaming other people, trying to control their behavior through attacking identity, maybe clicking our tongue, criticizing, correcting, being contemptuous, giving them a look, having a tone. But how do we let go of shame? How do we break the pattern? Well, first, we need to be in an energy of empathy, caring about other people's feelings and experiences. Brené Brown said, if we can share our story with someone who responds with empathy and understanding, shame can't survive. So we can be that empathetic person when someone wants to share their story of shame, or we can find that empathetic person and share our own story of shame with them. Brené also said, empathy's the antidote to shame. The two most powerful words when we are in struggle are me too. We need to love and support each other. Shame cannot survive being spoken. Then, we need to be authentic. Whew, this one's tricky. Brené Brown says, authenticity is a collection of choices that we have to make every day. It's about the choice to show up and be real. The choice to be honest. The choice to let our true selves be seen. We need to spend quiet moments every day. Number one, hearing ourselves, maybe through meditation, vision journaling, prayer, morning pages from Julia Cameron, which I'm loving lately. I'll be talking about that on a future happy bit. But these reflective times to know ourselves, hear ourselves, and even know what is my authentic self. How does she show up? How does she feel? Brené Brown says, fitting in and belonging are not the same thing. In fact, fitting in is one of the greatest barriers to belonging. Fitting in is about assessing a situation and becoming who you need to be in order to be accepted. Belonging, on the other hand, doesn't require us to change who we are. Instead, it requires us to be who we are. Who are you? Are you being who you were born to be, your authentic self? From that place of authenticity, shame has no power over you because you know who you are, what you're born here to do, what your priorities are, how you want to show up in this world. And no one can control you when you know from the inside out, from an intuitive, heart-centered place, how you are meant to show up in this life. It's a beautiful place. At the heart of these shifts we're trying to make with empathy and authenticity is the need to be courageous. And I'm quoting a lot of Brené Brown because she's the queen of shame and authenticity. But another quote from Brené. Brené said, courage is a heart word. The root of the word courage is cor, the Latin word for heart. In one of its earliest forms, the word courage meant to speak one's mind by telling all one's heart. Over time, this definition of speaking one's mind by telling one's heart has changed, and today we typically associate courage with heroic and brave deeds. But in my opinion, this definition fails to recognize the inner strength and level of commitment required for us to actually speak honestly and openly about who we are and about our experiences, good and bad. Speaking from our hearts is what I think of as ordinary courage. beautiful, right? So if shame has affected you, you have experiences of being shamed from your childhood, from comments your teachers may have made to you in high school or your peers, things your spouse or kids might say, the way others try to control your behavior or try to make you better, maybe it's a parent, the antidote is to speak your truth. The antidote is to know yourself and to speak all of your heart to a trusted friend. Also, we need to be self-compassionate with ourselves. We need to reach out and connect and engage in quality self-care and experience that empathy. In this digital age, so many of us are not having those heart-centered connections, and that's why I love the Vibrant Happy Women Club, where we connect with real-life women virtually via video chat, and we share our stories, and we speak all of our hearts in a spirit of vulnerability and authenticity, which leads to trust, connection, healing, all of those beautiful things that we women can provide for each other. Where do we go from here? If you felt shamed, find a group of women to speak your truth with, to share all of your heart, to have that courage. Spend time meditating or reflecting every day to know yourself, to hear yourself, to know your authentic self and interact from that place. But I have a kind of a fun tip that I use to transcend those moments of shame as well. When I'm meditating, I like to envision myself sitting on a mountain peak. Below me are clouds, so I can't see the base of the mountain. But what I see above me is the sky and other mountain peaks. And in that place, I feel as if I'm communing with God and receiving strength into my soul and my spirit. Sometimes I will even imagine my spouse or my teens, my unruly teens, or my other kids or whoever might be shaming me in a moment of time, and having them up there on another mountain peak next to me or across from me, depending on how close you imagine your mountain peaks to be. And I imagine them being there as their highest, most authentic self, where I can see and hold space for their best self above those clouds, and all the yuck is down below. That is a healing place for me, where I can remember, oh, I am calm, I am loved, I have a work to do, I can share my love with other people, and their words, their shame tactics don't have to affect me, rising above it, transcending it on that mountain. Also, from that place, it helps me not to shame other people, because I remember, oh yeah, I am way better than this. I am here to receive light from God, from a higher power, and share that light with other people. How can I increase light? I can gently speak only words of love. Maybe I set a vow or an intention to never again criticize, because where does it get us? It gets us nowhere. So I want you to think about shame, how you can let go of feelings of being shamed, but also how you can stop shaming other people, because I know we all do it at times. Maybe that means you stop clicking your tongue or sighing or criticizing, correcting, name-calling, yelling. And that sounds impossible, but if you spend a few moments every day in meditation, coming up and transcending all the yuck of our planet right now, transcending that and sitting on that mountain peak and imagining you, God, the universe, a higher power, connecting, receiving light, strength, and love, then you remember, oh, this is who I am. I am a light. I am love, and I'm here to share love. Then you can kind of go back down that mountain and engage in your real life more from that authentic place, from an energy of love, seeing the good, helping others to be their highest self, even if they're unruly teens who make you miserable. You go back again and again and again to transcend that stress and transcend that sadness, transcend that anxiety, meditating on that mountain peak above the clouds, connecting to that higher power or your higher self or God, whatever you call it, receiving love and kindness and light, filling up your tank. So you can go back again and again and keep your intention to only let positive, loving words cross your lips. And that is my happy bit for you today. I send you all my love. I know you can do this. Let us all, as vibrant, happy women, set the intention to not only not allow shame to affect us, but to not let shameful words cross our lips. I will see you next time. And until then, make it a vibrant, happy week. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Vibrant Happy Women podcast at www.jenriday.com.